Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. The way consumers view labels in the grocery store is subject of two University of Florida studies. One looks at how we react to colors used in packaging, and the other shows consumers read the terms non-GMO and organic as pretty much the same thing. An associate professor of marketing, consumer behavior, and applied econometrics for the UF Institute of Food and Agriculture Sciences led the study looking into whether color helps draw customers' attention to information on food labels enough to impact their preferences. Dr. Zhifeng Gao joins us now to talk about how much color plays a role in what ends up in our carts. Dr. Gao, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm here. Yeah.
And Dr. Brandon McFadden is an assistant professor at UF IFAS with areas of expertise in consumer behavior and food choice. Dr. McFadden joins us now to talk about the findings of his study that measured how much more people were willing to pay for products labeled non-GM versus those labeled organic. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We are talking about the subconscious choices that we make as consumers in the grocery store. You can become part of that conversation, too, by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. So first, Dr. Gao, your background is in marketing, consumer behavior, and applied econometrics. What exactly is that field?
Basically, I'm interested in studying how consumer responds to information in the market, like how the food label affects their choice. And in general, applied econometrics, they use all kinds of statistical methods, try to figure out how the different factors affecting consumer preference and the choice of food products.
How did you first get interested in this kind of science?
That's basically from part of my PhD dissertation. I try to study how country over region labeling. 10 years ago, it's kind of a hot topic. I mean, USDA tried to decide whether they want mandatory country or region label on the beef product and of fruit product. And then I'm interested in how consumer responds to this country or region information. Do they really care about it? And if this kind of information is in the market, are they willing to pay more for the product of U.S.? So that's how I get into this field, yeah.
So you were looking into if people are interested in paying, if people would be willing to pay more if they knew exactly where something came from?
Yes, yes.
So you've done studies on packaging before, and now you're looking into colors.
All right. Yeah, I have been most time. I mean, we use a survey type of research trying to ask whether you are willing to pay more for product from U.S., whether you are willing to pay more for organic. And then at one point, I'm trying to find actually a dissertation topic for my PhD student. And then I think, okay, actually in the real world, it's not just that piece of information. I mean, that label. We all have other aspects of the label, say like colors, and we all know by intuitive color do have impact on consumer choice. And they said, why not we say how the color affect color of the label affect consumer choice? That's where this initial idea come from.
Well, colors do communicate, right? So, what kind of colors did you look at?
We use red color and the blue color. We read a lot of past research, and there is a big field trying to study the impact of color. They say the red and blue are kind of like two different streams of the color, so have big contrast. So that's why we use red and blue.
Yeah, well, they're most dissimilar. So then you looked at things with the label's background being the majority of what the consumer sees on first glance, being either red or blue for your study. So did the color of the font have any impact on this, or you just looked at the background color on labels?
In the current paper, we just present the result from the background color. Actually, we also have another study trying to see the font color, like the font is blue and font is red, but seem like the font color does not have any impact on consumer choice. That's why we did not get that kind of information published.
So that's interesting. But so you put these different colored labels on strawberries specifically. How'd you choose strawberries of all things?
Strawberry because part of the project is funded by the strawberry project, so we need to use strawberry as a subject. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you had to give them a nod.
Right.
Yeah. But the strawberries themselves are red. Do you think the results might have been different if you were doing, I don't know, blueberries or oranges or limes?
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting question, and we have thought about to do another study trying to say what if we use a blueberry to see whether blue color will perform better compared to red color, because our current study is showing that red color performed better than blue color. So
with the strawberries, the red color performed better than blue?
Red color, in our study, basically we found out red color made consumers retain attention and pay more attention to the information on the food labels. And interestingly, consumers are willing to pay more for one of the characteristics of the blueberry, of the strawberry with red color. That's an antioxidant.
Oh, because red's an antioxidant, so people read it that way?
I don't know. I mean, in the blue color background, people, I mean, don't pay, have significantly lower willing to pay compared to the label with red background.
Okay, so if somebody's looking at two packages of strawberries and one has a red background label, the other one has a blue background label, they'll be more likely to pay more money for the one with the red background, is what you found.
Yeah, that's correct.
Well, I wonder why. I don't know if your study can say that. I mean, it's kind of a psychological question, but any indication?
Actually, we try to answer this question in our paper, and actually you kind of like give us some answer, because some people argue that because the product we use is strawberry, and the red color kind of reinforce that identity of the red color of strawberry. That's maybe one of the reasons. So that's why we kind of think it's interesting to use blue color to see whether the blue color can reinforce the blue color of the blueberry and make consumers pay more for a blueberry with a blue background.
Yeah, it ends up kind of becoming a monochromatic thing, and that might look a little bit classier or something, or people might think that it's worth more somehow. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
So I feel like I see a lot of green these days in food labeling. Is there any one color that's kind of proven as a winner in consumers' eyes, like overall?
I don't know, because we only use strawberry. Definitely, we can try to test different product, try to see which color perform better on which product. But in general, in the color research, basically, we all know red color make people be alertive and be more energetic. So blue make people feel calmed. So we are not sure how this kind of like effect will affect consumer choice of other product.
Yeah, it's really an interesting area of study.
Yeah.
So one of the more confusing things on packaging is verbiage. Those words carry a lot of power when people are inundated with information these days. I mean, if you just look at eggs, you got free range, pasture raised, cage free, organic, non-GMO. And that brings us to Dr. McFadden. Now, your expertise is in consumer behavior and food choice. Now, those are heavily linked subjects in your work. So how does consumer behavior impact the food choice?
Well, so attitudes, perceptions about different production systems, also, you know, social interactions with people that, you know, that can affect behavior, and sometimes that can affect food choice, and sometimes it can't. And so it's pretty complex how those two things can interact with each other. And to make it even more complex, sometimes those behaviors might affect consumers to vote one way, so act one way in a voting booth, and then when they're what we would call a citizen, and then act a different way when they're in the store. We call them a consumer. So,
and when they're voting with their when they're voting with their dollars, right?
So exactly.
How did you first get interested in this field of study?
Well, so my undergraduate work was in marketing, and I've been interested in consumer behavior and food choice for a long time, and so a lot of times now, and what this study focuses on is kind of, you know, a policy change or some kind of change will come about, and I'm interested in, you know, how that policy change might affect the choice landscape for consumers, and then how that new choice landscape will affect food choice.
So your most recent study looks at the label of non-GM or non-genetically modified food labels versus those that say organic. Can you tell me a little bit about how you studied that?
Yeah, well, so the motivation for this study came from the signing of President Obama, the summer before last, signed a mandatory labeling bill for GMOs. And in that bill, now food companies are supposed to have it like 2 years, you know, to put these labels on food. So we would expect to see them this coming summer. Sometimes these things get delayed a little bit, but as of now, we would expect to see labels on everything by this coming summer. And in that piece of legislation, food companies can use a text to display, you know, whether a food is GM or not. They can use a QR code, you know, that you scan with your phone, your smart device, and then it will tell you information about whether or not there are genetically modified ingredients in a food. And then they have another possibility as a symbol. And so then we started thinking, well, we can foresee a world out there where, food companies are either going to label one of these, or they might choose to seek out the non-GMO Project Verified label. They might choose to seek out USDA organic, inputs, which are implicitly, by definition, non-GMO. Or, like, when you go to the store, you might notice that some products actually carry both, you know, the non-GMO Project and the USDA organic. And so we were just curious as to, you know, what, how... Right now, when you think about in the grocery store, for the most part, consumers are looking at those labels, the USDA organic and the non-GMO project, relative to no other information, right, about whether something has genetically modified ingredients. And so after this, you know, they're going to kind of be looking at it relative to these other products that do say, you know, this food happens to carry genetically modified ingredients. And so we were curious as to how, you know, people might, how that might affect food choice.
And how did it affect food choice? Have you seen that?
Yeah, well, so... So not surprisingly, people were willing to pay a premium for USDA organic or a non-GMO project label, which other studies have looked at this before previously, but not these specific labels, not the actual labels that are used, and also not relative to, you know, other foods saying that they do have genetically modified ingredients. And so some interesting results we found were, so we looked at it for two products, granola bars and apples. And we felt that necessary because, you know, people respond to genetically modified foods or foods with genetically modified ingredients differently depending on whether that's just an ingredient or it's the food. And one thing we didn't look at in this study was meat, but we've also found that, you know, people are essentially, they will pay more to avoid a genetically modified animal. They'll pay, then, you know, going down the list, a fresh food, like an apple, and then, you know, the smallest premium is associated with something where there's just an ingredient in, so like a manufactured or packaged food, that makes sense.
Yeah, I get. So it's like a scale of what people are willing to pay more for. It's worth it more for them to have a non-genetically modified animal, and then it's
right.
Worth it to pay a little more for a non-genetically modified piece of produce or whole food item.
Right, exactly.
And then they processed stuff.
Exactly. So people respond differently to different kinds of food categories, essentially. But in this study, we looked at packaged food, granola bars, which, you know, after food companies do have to label, the packaged food are where you'll find most of the, you know, this contains genetically modified ingredients type label. You'll find that, you know, that'll be on the, vast majority of packaged food. And then we also chose an apple. And one reason we chose the apple is because the Arctic apple, which has been modified to not brown and bruises easily. So you know how you cut an apple and it browns fairly quickly. The Arctic apple has been genetically modified, which is starting to hit some grocery stores, I think, in the Midwest right now.
So it just doesn't oxidize?
Exactly. They've essentially, you know, removed the gene that causes that trait to brown.
Hmm.
And so, you know, they're able to actually then sell it pre-cut, right, in like a package. So you can go to the store and pick it up, and the apple's already cut up for you.
Okay. I see what you're saying. And then they don't look terrible.
Right. All exactly. Right. And, well, and this is an issue, too. I mean, you know, I've been told that, like, at schools or something like that, it's hard to prep things like fruit.
Yeah.
For, you know, prep them early because if anything's, you know, if the apples are very brown, then for instance, kids won't want to eat them or, you know.
Well, I'm sure Dr. Gao would know about that. Dr. Gao would know that the color of an apple brown would not sell well.
Right.
So I wanted to I'm sorry, but you said earlier, and you skimmed by it, I want to make sure that I get it right. You said that anything organic, if it is USDA certified organic, then it cannot be a GMO.
Correct. Yeah, that's part of the definition.
All right. I just wanted to make sure that we have that established. Do you think that consumers actually get that, or do they understand that?
No. So right after, for the most part, no. So right after this bill was passed, the Organic Grocers Association, I think, Organic Trade Association, I might be getting that name wrong. Anyway, they started a campaign that organic means non-GMO and much more. So they are, you know, they're aware of this. They're trying their best to relay this information to consumers. That's part of the organic definition, which is interesting because to get back to the willingness to pay real quick, what we found is the non-GMO project label received more of a premium for the granola bars than USDA organic. But then when we went to apples, the USDA organic received a larger premium, not by much, just barely more. But definitely for the packaged food, it seems as though the non-GMO project label, you know, is more effective at collecting a premium than the USDA organic.
Well, that's kind of interesting. I mean, and then I wanted to ask also, I mean, a lot of people refer to GMOs as Frankenfoods, which kind of makes sense on Halloween. But, I mean, is that a mischaracterization?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I think there's just, you know, there's a lot of misconceptions, I think, about genetics and agricultural production in general by a lot of people. I think, you know, there's a lot of misinformation out there that, you know, is pretty easily accessible.
Well, set me straight real quick in a Cliff Notes version. What makes something a GMO versus something that you've decided to breed together two different strains of apple, for example? What's the difference between a GMO and just selective breeding?
Well, so selective breeding is even different than kind of what you just talked about, where you take two different breeds. So that would be like hybridization.
Okay.
And then to go to genetic modification. So there are a couple of different levels here. There's like cisgenic, where you've introduced some gene from a similar species that could actually happen possibly over time through selective breeding or hybridization. And then there's transgenic, where you've inserted a gene from, you know, something that we would think couldn't happen in the wild, right, or in nature naturally. I hate that word natural, really, but anyway, so the way these genes have been inserted is, you know, in a lab instead of in a field, and it's been done with usually using agrobacterium or introduced with a virus, and so it's this host organism that they've introduce the other gene with that defines it as a GMO. And this is what, you know, the difference is then when we go to gene editing. When you think about gene editing, there is no host donor. And so this is why this is even possibly going to be regulated differently than what people refer to as a GMO. But what's interesting, you know, I say we wouldn't expect, you know, to find these things naturally, but actually there's been some recent studies that have come out. And as, you know, sequencing the genetic structure of for instance, let's say like a sweet potato, the possibility to sequence the DNA is becoming much more economically feasible. And we're starting, you know, some studies are coming out and claiming that what we're seeing is essentially what we would consider a GMO actually happening in nature. And a recent article, I think it came out about a year and a half ago, suggests that the sweet potatoes we consume were essentially nature's GMO.
Hmm.
So, you know,
just kind of happened on their own.
And yeah, exactly. And in nature, and actually through agrobacterium, very similar to what people are doing in a lab.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but why then? I mean, the way that you're presenting it sounds like it's no biggie. Why then are we labeling things GMOs? What are people afraid of with those?
Well, so let me say that, you know, I don't really like to talk about GMOs just as one entity. You know, each application is different. But the labeling is coming just for, you know, consumer concern. I mean, if you look at polls, generally, you know, a lot of people, around 80 to 90% of people, say they want the food label. And so it's just that type of pressure that has pushed the legislation. On a side note, in a study that we conducted not too long ago, we asked people if they wanted, you know, GMO food to be labeled, and 82% said yes. But then we asked people, too, if food with DNA should be labeled, and 80% said yes. So all that to say, you know, asking somebody if they would like free information without that information, you know, imposing some kind of cost, it would almost seem silly for people to say, no, I don't want the label.
Yeah. The thing is, though, if the label means that you're going to pay extra for it, it seems to be the way. I mean, if you look at anything that has any kind of label of organic, non-GMO, I mean, even all natural costs more anymore, and that I don't think has any meaning, does it?
Right. No. I mean, there's no standardized definition. No.
Yeah. We have a call coming in from Kathleen in Naples. Kathleen, what would you like to ask about?
Hi. I am a Naples dog treat company owner, and we've been in business for 11 years. And about 3 years ago, we totally changed our packaging on our treats to reflect actually just the opposite of very interesting what the first gentleman was speaking about with colors and reds and blues. And we went to a clear package with a very clean, kind of classy label that doesn't have the smiling dogs on it and the happy puppies and balloons. And what we did was we mentioned USA made, USA sourced, single ingredient treats.
Uh-huh.
And put American flags and Naples own. And we have done exceptionally well with that whole type of marketing effort, because the customers, the dog treats are not covered by the packaging. You can actually very clearly see the pureness you're getting.
Well, this could also...
It's been a very interesting road regarding the marketing. We do not also say, which I'm very appreciative of your second speaker, all natural. It drives me crazy.
Yeah.
Because there is no such thing. But I just wanted to mention that because I'm a packaging person for sure. I'm always looking at it and very attentive to it. So this conversation is really very, very interesting. Thank you.
It is, Kathleen. And Dr. Gao, that kind of speaks a little bit to that monochromatic feel that you were mentioning with the red label performing well with the strawberries.
Right, yeah.
Do you foresee... Sorry?
Clear package is a good idea because the consumer can directly observe those products inside. So maybe you don't need additional layer try to tell them, I mean, what the product it is. So that's an interesting idea.
Yeah, and I would appreciate a clear label on strawberry packaging so I can see in and make sure there aren't any moldy ones under there. You know, because
right.
There's always that one that just went bad. So let's talk a little bit more about the connection of the presentation of these labels and how it's affecting how consumers are reading or not reading organic and non-GM differently. Dr. Gao, a lot of these non-GM and organic foods use earth tones in their marketing. What would you think if they all went to red?
I think if they went to red, definitely people will maybe attract more attention to the labels. But I mean, from another side, red kind of like most times say stop. I mean, stop, like the traffic light. I mean, stop. So I'm not sure. I mean, this seems like it has both positive and negative effect. I'm not sure what's the total effect it would be. So it's interesting.
Yeah, I think that you're going to have a lot more studies down the road. And I think that monochromatic and then the clear packaging when you're trying to communicate the purity, like Kathleen was talking about with the dog treats, that would probably work with human treats just as well.
Yeah.
Dr. McFadden, we see these labels everywhere now as people are becoming more and more health conscious. It feels like you got about a half and half chance now that the box of food you reach for on a grocery store shelf is going to have some sort of non-GM label or something. Does the prevalence of this sort of labeling have anything to do with your decision to compare the two categories of food right now? Are you trying to make things clearer for the consumers as to what the two of them mean?
Yeah, well, so we're just curious as to we were curious as to were these two labels kind of more like substitutes or complements, right? So because, like you said, you're seeing lots of labels, right? And like we said, even on some products, both of them. So, you know, we were somewhat curious as to why both, right? If organic means non-GMO, why carry both, right? And, of course, like we've said, most consumers don't know. But also, what we found is they are substitutes. So, essentially, when you combine both of them, you know, a person's willingness to pay, you would expect it to be additive. It's not. So, you actually receive, you know, not as large of a premium for both of them as you do for each of them separately. And so we were somewhat curious about that. We were also, you know, we were really curious too about this effect of having the contains GM label as the alternative instead of no labeling about GM as the alternative, right? Because all those other boxes of cereal, for instance, that don't have the non-GM label or any other label, you know, it's just kind of like a status quo, right? There's no labeling about anything. And so the new alternative is going to be that it does contain it. And so how does that affect choice? But I think I'd like to say something too about what Kathleen said. I thought that was very interesting, and I don't think it's just also because there were kind of a couple of points there. It wasn't just the clear packaging, right? It was also the USA and the local, right, Naples. So there were a couple of other factors going on there. And one thing that we found that was pretty interesting, we were curious to find out what consumers were most supportive of genetically modified foods, like why the foods were modified. So, for instance, if it were, you know, to make a food more nutritious, so like a consumer-based benefit compared to, you know, make it easier for producers, right? And one thing we included in there, because I had just gotten to Florida, was to keep production in the USA. And the reason I chose to put that on there is because that is something that, you know, could be a real question for the citrus industry, right? Mm-hmm. And so we included that, and that was the number one reason why people would support, even over keeping prices lower for consumers. Consumers were more supportive of a GM application that kept a production of a commodity in the United States.
And Dr. Gao, you also mentioned that you studied that in your previous research as regards to meat. Did you find that people would pay a premium for meat that came from a place as described as in the USA?
Yeah, definitely. There, out of the our study, there are many studies trying to show that consumers are willing to pay more of the food products produced in the U.S. And actually, we also have another study trying to study the interacting effect between the country of origin and organic. And people do say even the product carries the same USDA organic certified organic label, but people are willing to pay more for that certified organic label for U.S. product compared to those from Mexico and China, even though the organic standard is the same. So definitely there is some interaction effect going on, substitution like Brandon mentioned.
Mm. Well, that's all the time that we have time for today. The show is so interesting. I really enjoyed it. But I wanted to thank both of our guests, Dr. Zifeng Gao and also Dr. Brandon McFadden. Thanks so much for being on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Our show today was produced by Rachel Iacovone and Mike Kinnairy. Our director is Richard Chin-Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida. Happy Halloween.